Welcome to After Hours, an abbreviated After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. We'll be talking with Ronnie Marmo, who is playing Lenny Bruce in arguably the best show that will be in Chicago all fall, winter, summer, and spring. But first, I was downtown yesterday night and saw, I was part of this new Halloween parade they do every 3 years, and I actually dressed up for it. Embarrassed myself by pretending to be a copy of the Daily News, the late Daily News, the ghost of the Daily News. It was a relatively small parade on Columbus, and this year it's a huge parade on State Street, and I was not part of it. So I am going to name as the best Halloween season event the family concert called Spooktacular at the Music Institute of Chicago's Nichols Hall in Evanston. And to talk about it, my old, dear, wonderful friend, Fiona Queen, who also has what, the greatest name in the world, Fiona, the greatest name in the world you have. How are you?
Really wonderful to hear your voice, Rick.
You too.
Thank
sweetie.
You for having me on.
You too. Now, tell me about Spooktacular before you tell me and enlighten the listeners out there about the Music Institute. You asked me to be part of Spooktacular, and I can't do it because I've got to interview some author somewhere else. What is Spooktacular?
Well, it's just kind of the second year we're running this. It's a family concert, to be sure. It's about just under an hour-long concert in Nichols Concert Hall starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday, October 27, that features Carnival of the Animals, kind of done in costume, a really top-notch all-faculty member ensemble. But then we're also doing it with the Ogden Nash, very humorous verses that are going along with this. So Steve Robinson is our narrator. Formerly WFMT executive vice president
Steve's
and general
narrating?
Manager. Yes.
Tell him that you asked me first. Steve's been on this show like 10 times. Steve's got a million podcasts. Give him my best. I saw him on the bus like a week ago.
Yes.
You know, this is Chicago is becoming the world's smallest town for me. Oh, Steve Robinson, I saw him on the bus 3 days ago. He'll do a great job. He'll do a great, great job. Is there a haunted house aspect to this, Fiona? What's that?
It's a haunted musical open house, so different from other things, because we've got a school on the lower level with 10 or 12 rooms, so each room has a different musical performance, and they're all, all of the performers are in costume, and the kids basically go trick-or-treating from room to room like they would in a neighborhood.
Oh, God, that sounds fantastic.
And, I'll be going to the farmer's market this Saturday to pick up, more than 14 pumpkins, and a team all carves the pumpkins to match the music or the theme, so if it's Harry Potter, there's a Harry Potter pumpkin, and then we just sort of deck out the hall with corn stalks and music and allow the parents to come. There's a different, if people can't make it to the concert, they can come just to the haunted open house for $5 per trick-or-treater. We do allow parents to just come and escort their children. But if you can make it to the concert at the same time, that's a much better deal because that's a $10 ticket that gets you into both events.
And is the concert at 3 o'clock or does everything start at 3 o'clock next Sunday?
The concert is at 3 o'clock, and the haunted open house will happen sort of as soon as that as that concludes, but we are sort of advertising a 4 p.m. start time for people that just come to the haunted open house. So
I must tell you, I have done a number of shows and observed even more at Nichols Hall. I think Nichols Hall is the greatest medium-sized performance venue in the Midwest. Am I making too much of this, Fiona Queen?
No, I don't think you're making enough of it, actually.
in the country, in the entire country.
No, it really is such a beautiful place and built for, acoustics and sound and just gorgeous on the inside. In fact, we put a poster or a banner on the outside of the building so you can kind of see, what's on the inside of the building, because the outside just really doesn't give you an idea of just how gorgeous the space is. So
do you still put on, people should do, they should go to Music Inst, that's MUSICINST.org to see all the offerings that take place there. It's incredibly accessible. It's a short walk from the L. There's lots of parking around there, and it is just worth exploring on. You've been there how long now, Fee?
This is my 15th year, hard to believe, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But it is, I mean, it still is a relatively undiscovered treasure. I know that it's packed for many of the events, but it's still worth visiting for.
Well, I think it's because Chicago is such a vibrant cultural city that there's so much going on in every corner. But it's, again, in Evanston, it really does stand out. And with everything that's gone on to build up the city there, we really are feeling now that the series and the school itself really has a very central and privileged place in Evanston. We love it there.
Well, you'll have to come on for an hour and talk all about the Music Institute after the holidays. Do you dress up for Halloween, Fiona Queen?
Yes, we are all in costume.
What are you wearing?
It might be boring your daily news.
You can borrow. Yeah, it'll be sweeping the country now, along with Harry Potter costumes. There are people across the country going as the ghost of the Chicago Daily News. What a brilliant idea, Fiona! It is as always lovely to talk to you. The Music Institute of Chicago's family concert Spooktacular, which sounds really amazing. It sounds like this fantastic haunted house with a musical kind of theme, with the great Steve Robinson narrating. It takes place at 3 p.m. next Sunday at Nichols Hall in Evanston. And do go, people. Go to musicinst.org. That's musicinst.org for all sorts of information. Fiona, have a great time out there while I'm interviewing some author downtown.
And Thank you so much. Rick.
I will see you for dinner in November, honey.
Sounds wonderful.
All right, take care. Take care. It really is, ladies and gentlemen, a fantastic place. So is the Royal George Theater. And my next guest, after a few commercials, I will read one so I don't have to read any more. He and I will talk all about that. He is bringing Lenny Bruce to Chicago in a show that I have seen and loved and was moved by and provoked by and engaged by, called I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. You will meet Ronnie Marmo in just a couple minutes. Welcome back. Ronnie Marmo just thinks it's cooler to wear headphones. Now he's not wearing headphones. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
I don't want to mess up my hair, Rick.
Well, it's messy. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about that on that score. Ronnie is here opening in previews Wednesday at the Royal George Cabaret in a show that, well, we'll talk about it for the next 45 minutes. It's titled, I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. He stars in it. He wrote it. Joe Mantegna, who is also sitting here, who I vaguely remember seeing naked in hair 45 years ago at the Studebaker. Where was it?
Monumental.
Studebaker?
No, it was at the Schubert.
That's right, the Schubert.
And then we moved over to the Blackstone.
That's right.
Joe missed being naked so much he made me do it in this play.
Well, there you go.
He's like, I miss looking at myself naked.
Spread the love. Yeah.
Ronnie, this show was a huge hit for both of you in Los Angeles before moving to two different places in New York. How did this all happen? I know that you played Lenny Bruce a few years back without really knowing a great deal, as most people don't. Lenny Bruce is a name. Lenny Bruce is a legend. Mm-hmm. Lenny Bruce is, oh, yeah, Lenny Bruce was someone's. I got a note today from someone who read my story, which you all can do in the Tribune's Arts and Entertainment section. Very nice older woman saying, that was a wonderful story. I've ordered tickets. I'm trying to pretend to be a voice.
You're doing great. Don't worry.
I've ordered tickets. I remember seeing him on the stage at Mr. Kelly's. He was always with a newspaper. And I had to write back and go, you know, ma'am, that was probably Mort Saul. Lenny Bruce didn't use a newspaper as a prop. Okay, back to you, Ronnie.
That's okay. That's good.
You, You were convinced to be in a show, sort of reluctantly to be in a show.
Yeah, Charlie Brill, who's a comic, wonderful comic, Charlie Brill and Mitzi McCall. Charlie's a friend, and he came to me with this script, and he said, a friend, Sam Bobrick, who passed away last week, actually, Sam Bobrick, who I love, and Sam Bobrick and Julie Stein wrote this play, said, Lenny Bruce is back, and boy, is he pissed.
Yeah.
And I thought the title was great, and but I was scared to do it because I started to research him, and I thought, how can I play this guy? And after a bit, Charlie and I had a bet, literally a bet, and I lost, and I said, okay.
Yeah.
And it took 2 years to convince me to do it. Finally, I did it. And then once I did it, I fell in love with Lenny. I started to research and went, wow, there's so much I identify with this guy. It's crazy.
What did you fall in love with, Ronnie Marmo?
Well, we have the same relationship with our mom. My mom was a little out there and an incredible lady, and we had this, like, you know, not inappropriate relationship, let me be clear, but a little weird. It was like my son, it was almost like she'd go out on dates many years after my father split, and I'd wait on the front lawn with a bat going, what do you want, my mother? You know what I mean? Like, we had this wacky thing. I'm not kidding, Joe.
I know you're not.
I know. We had this wacky thing. So it was like we had the
this
love.
This is all taking place in Brooklyn, your native Brooklyn.
Exactly. Yeah. Brooklyn, then Jersey, which my parents thought it'd be better to move us to Jersey to give us a better life, which is hysterical. I got in more trouble there. But so there was that. And then also my love for my daughters. I many years ago struggled with addiction. I'm now recovered from that, in recovery. So Lenny never found recovery. So many things, just his, you know, just who he was.
Yeah,
I just loved him. I fell in love with him.
There's a lot to dig in because we don't let Lenny Bruce, given this, you know, this internet age, there is not. You assume now that there is, you know, that you could go search, if you wanted to research Jesus, that you'd find a bunch of YouTubes of
hysterical.
Jesus. There is a relatively limited amount of actual. You got some albums, you got a few TV clips, but you had to really dig deep, didn't you?
Absolutely. A lot of what makes our play so special is a third of the play probably just came from Kitty and I and her conversations.
Kitty is Lenny Bruce's daughter.
Yes, and metaphorically going through some boxes in the attic, as it were, talking about her dad and special pictures. I was telling these guys on the way over, Kitty gave me a letter between her between Lenny and Hugh Hefner, a private letter that I now own as a gift. And so,
was it from Hefner to Lenny?
It was from Lenny to Hef.
Yeah,
thanking him for the money for the legal.
Sure.
And, the bail money.
The bail, literally, and some other stuff. But anyway, so you know, if you really love Lenny Bruce and want to dig deeper, the play really does that for you. We really got to know the man, and there's a lot of information you will not find by Googling.
When did you, as you're starting to dig and do your research, when did it start to occur to you that this might become a show for you? I think first you were just curious, but then all of a sudden you're becoming.
Well, the first run I did for six months, Charlie Brill, and he admits this, he's not necessarily a director, so he just giggled a lot, and that was my direction. And so I found myself, like, I would look out in the audience, and if he would look for his heart, that means I forgot my lines. That was really my direction. And he was wonderful. We had a lot of fun. So then a couple of years later, I was on General Hospital, and the head writer, Bob Guza, is a theater guy, and he's like, I want to do a play. And I was like, I'm thinking about revisiting this material. Would you direct me in this? So he did, and we did, and I took it. Once I had all that direction, I took it further than I took it as far as I could, and then I felt like, okay, the material now, like, I want to tell all of it. And so I thought it was, and I love that script. I have nothing but respect for that play. But I felt like I want to tell it all, and all the dirty stuff, and just everything, and take it to the limit, you know.
And that's when you call your friend Mr. Mantegna.
Yes.
And he says to you, Joe, what? I want to be Lenny Bruce, Joe.
Yeah, well, I'd worked with Ronnie prior to that. You know, he had his theater company in Chicago, or in California, rather, the 68 Cent Theater Crew. And I directed a one-act play for them a few years back. And I did a film that Ronnie had written. And I saw a lot of myself in him, at least me, 30 years ago, kind of thing.
I can see that. Yeah.
And so, just like he said, he was influenced by Lenny Bruce. In a way, I felt that thing. I'd see Ronnie and what he was doing. The fact that I was with the Organic Theater for so many years here in Chicago, I felt I was just had such respect for what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
In the sense of be an actor, be a writer, be a theater entrepreneur, do all of it. So anyway, when he says to me, "Look, I've got this play. I've been fooling around with that. I wrote about Lenny Bruce. If you have the time, I'd really love for you to consider directing it." And I said, "Well, let's see it. Can you do it? Can you just do it for me?" And he said, "You like do it?" I said, "Yeah,
you
I don't
read
you
it." Like, in you your stand up and do it. No, like right then, stand up and do
it. I said,
it 90
"Just do
minutes.
It, do it." And so he got up and he did it. And for me, I mean, my favorite phrases about in theater is, "If it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage."
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that holds true in film, whether it's theater, television, or wherever it may be. And from the time I saw him do it, I realized, okay, it's on the page. So then I said, "Yeah, Ronnie, absolutely. Well, if you can wait," I was doing the series Criminal Minds at the time.
In a way, too, and I don't mean to. I think in part what this does for you, it's that collaborative. You know, you're a star, but this is that collaborative effort that reminds you of the organic. And
absolutely.
It absolutely brings you back to the bleacher bum days.
Oh, exactly. Right.
And I think that's something that. And also, we'll talk after some commercials in the news about the incredible ties that Lenny Bruce has to the city of Chicago. This is where he was virtually unknown when Hefner arranged for him to come play a basement bar on Rush Street called the Cloister Inn, where he became the Lenny Bruce that many of you may know. After this show, read the story in the Tribune. There's a link to a longer story that was in the Tribune many years ago. And after a short commercial break and the news, we'll be back with Joe Mantegna and Ronnie Marmo. The show is called I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. It opens Wednesday at the Royal George Theater. Nick Harkin, what Ticketmaster, is that the best way to go? What's the
Royal George box office?
Or whatever, someone wants to go online. And
LennyBruceOnStage.com. That's
Lenny
what we send.
LennyBruceOnStage.com. Or say, Lenny Bruce should call you, or call me at the Tribune. I'll give you all the information you need. You can go to the Royal George Theater or Lenny Bruce on stage. We'll be back. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Ronnie Marmo, Joe Mantegna, talking about our mutual affection for Michelle L'Amour, one of the great entertainers in town. Ronnie is in town. He's going to open. You start rehearsals tomorrow for I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, which is opening Wednesday at the Royal George Theater. You've performed this now, you know, some 200 times in Los Angeles and in New York. I have to imagine that the obvious question is, like, aren't you tired of doing it? I don't think that's true. I think you probably learn more about this character,
yes,
this complicated but brilliant man.
Yeah, well first let me say I've been in rehearsal since I came out of my mother. I mean, if we're going to just call it what it is. That's when I actually started rehearsing this thing. I swear, I'm not kidding. But in addition to that, I've done it 220 times. Who's counting? 120 in L.A. and 100 off-Broadway in New York. And I'm just getting started. I'm just starting to have fun. You know, every night I just say to myself, you know, listen to yourself. Joe always says nice and easy. And I take that in and then I say, listen to myself and listen to the words. And I just explore and try to find it. That's why people see this play 12 times, and they do. Because it really, the words are the same, but you never kind of know what's going to happen.
You know, the audience tonight, I saw it at a very hip, strange place called The Box on the Lower East Side, yeah, which I found fascinating. The crowd was wonderfully mixed. Ben Vereen was sitting at a table next to me. And after the show, I give the shortest review I've ever heard. I go, "Mr. Vereen, I love you. You're great. I'm a great admirer, Mr. Vereen." And I said, "What did you think?" He goes, "Woo, wow." That's an incredible review.
I think he texted me and left me that same voicemail. And
that was it. But it's all ages. And what occurs to me is there are people in Chicago who remember seeing Lenny Bruce at the Gate of Horn, where he got arrested with George Carlin. There's a great picture.
Yeah, young George Carlin.
George Carlin in a coat and tie, because he was performing at the Playboy Club.
Yeah, and I think Carlin got arrested because he refused to give his license, his
That's
ID,
right.
And he wanted to be in the paddy wagon. You know, I always had a dream to write a play in the back of the paddy wagon between George and Lenny. I may do that. Joe, don't get
That's
comfortable.
Nice. He wants to play.
Why don't you do Lenny?
You
do George.
His life. But part of it is, in the way the play's constructed, I think it does an incredible job of not only being entertaining, but also being enlightening. I mean, you are sort of, it is the I'm Lenny Bruce. You are telling people who Lenny Bruce is and was, and addressing the many complexities, his relationship with his mom, his relationship with his wife, who was a stripper. How many alterations did that play go through?
Well, when it's still going through. Yeah, I mean, we wrote last week. I put in a new bit. I'm doing Christ and Moses.
There'll be things here in this production tier that's going to be different.
Yeah, we did it just for Chicago.
Than we did in Los Angeles or New York.
Yeah, so we're constantly tinkering. I don't know how much Joe loves that because I can't help myself. That's why I really can't listen or see anything else because everything is important to me.
Yeah.
This play would be 7 hours if I got to do it the way I wanted to. But, you know, I really want everything about Lenny Bruce in the past that I've seen, I've heard, I've watched other shows. They kind of play this angry, bitter guy and they play the surface. He was so much more than that. And I just wanted to show the whole man.
One of the other things about so many of the portrayals I've seen, including Dustin Hoffman in the film, is that it's a nutty, drug-addicted goof. What people seem to forget is the reason Lenny Bruce was so influential is because Lenny Bruce was funny.
Yeah, he was a very funny man. And towards the end, he wasn't anymore, which is why the name of my play is what it's called.
Sure.
Because he actually obviously influenced so much more than just comedy. But, yes, he was a very, very funny man. And, you know, Dustin Hoffman's one of our greatest actors, right? But that doesn't mean everyone's perfectly cast. And I felt like he was great in some ways, but he played him kind of like a nebbishy little Jewish guy. And Lenny had this appeal to him and this charm and this thing. And Joan Rivers said that he was the sexiest guy that ever lived to her. And Kitty said her dad was the kind of guy that if you were friends with him, you would ask him if you can do him a favor and then you'd thank him.
Yeah.
Can I tar your roof, Lenny, please? Because he was just that guy, you know.
Some people come in to the show, I assume, expecting more of that, you know, down side of the flip side, the B side of the legend. And don't you find, as I did with the people I brought to the show in New York, who were both in their sort of mid-40s and so knew the name Lenny Bruce, but nothing else,
mm-hmm.
They were sort of overwhelmed by the depth of his humor, he has influenced, not only, he continues to influence generations. He's been dead for 50 years, for goodness sake. What was it, do you think, Ronnie Marmo, that made Lenny Bruce funny?
I think he held a mirror up to society. I think he was, you know, he said everything that everyone else was afraid to say.
Mm.
And, you know, and honestly, we had a couple of years there in between where some of his stuff may have been accepted. And now we're back even worse with this PC time we're in now.
Yeah.
Lenny'd have a field day. So not only was he funny, he was brilliantly, he was just so smart. And his bits were hysterical. And then they made a point. Like, to is a preposition, come is a verb. I do that piece mm-hmm. in the show. And when you get to the point, you go, wow, it's so smart. And it sounds so silly because I'm using those two words. He just was a jazz musician with his bits. I mean, the guy played jazz with the microphone and his words. I mean, he was
that's
one lyrical.
Of the, going to another Chicago connection, when he played at the Cloister Inn, came here in 1958, the 22-year-old leader of the three-piece house band was the legendary Ramsey Lewis, who when I called him about, you know, and said, well, what did you think? He, well, Rick, I'd never heard of him. Ramsey, one of the great gentlemen, I'd never heard of him before. But when he would get on there, he would say all sorts of things. And he was very much a traditional comedian. But then he would go off in these ways like a jazz improviser, which mm-hmm. goes to your thing. It's also, you know this, Ronnie Marmo, better than anybody. Lenny Bruce started by, you know, his original comedic act was like doing impressions of Jimmy Cagney
and Bogart,
Edward G.
All those
Robinson,
yeah.
which I think gives another interesting side to this guy.
He did nothing but he would do these, what do you call them? Yeah, he would imitate these guys.
Yeah.
But he would also, what he did was originally he stole his mother's entire act and he would go do his mom's act.
Yeah.
Because he thought it was funny. He would just steal her whole act and do his mom. And then one day he started riffing. You know, this is the first guy who like would go get a pack of cigarettes and then come back and have a 20-minute story about what happened on the way. And no one else was doing that. Or he would talk about his wife and they'd be like, you're going to talk, what are you doing? You
well, know? One of the reasons, don't you both think, is that when he first started to perform, one of his first performing jobs was like an MC in strip clubs.
Yeah, well, you'll see that in the play.
Yeah, I know. That's part.
Well, and he did that partly because he didn't want Honey stripping anymore, and so he would like MC these clubs to be near her, and then they tried to create an act together, and it didn't really work out. He had this 2-person act, so she could give up stripping and all, and you know, they had a really interesting rocky relationship, but there was a lot of love between them. And,
when you address that too, and no spoiler alert for you people, I'm hoping the show stays here for a couple of years at least. It opens Wednesday at the Royal George. Easiest way to get tickets and get a lot of other information, too, is to go to LennyBruceOnStage.com. Again, no spoiler alert, but the show begins with Lenny, 40 years old, dead.
Dead, naked on the toilet, lights up, and that's what you get. So
there you go. Bring your grandparents.
And apparently, if you sit house right, the mystery's over. In fact, I know that to be true because this audience, the way it's set up, this theater, not only house right, I think from center all the way to right, you get what you need.
You get your money's worth.
And my, you know, my inner monologue is what I'm actually trying to say is it's cold in here. That's what I'm trying to say, right. Even though it looks like that's I'm right. dead. And so Joe really encouraged this because I didn't write the play that way. It ended a certain way, but Joe was like, well, let's bookend it. And he was so right because it's like lights come up and we're right in the play.
He said the line, you know, because he was, when he read did the play for me the first time, and he basically just said the speech. I was found, you know, naked, dead on a toilet, you know, and I thought to myself, well, that's how we got to start the play.
Yeah.
That you got to let's tell the story from the end to the beginning to the end again.
I know you've done a lot of directing in your career. This must have been terribly enjoyable, challenging a bit, but also enjoyable for you.
Very enjoyable. Yeah. And again, it goes to the quote of, you know, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. And so if it's on the page, then you've got something to work with. And so I had the right guy to do it. He had written the right material. And just
you also greatly admire the way he went about researching this, too.
Oh, without question. Because, look, it's tough enough. I mean, I think you mentioned it even in your article that I got a chance to play Dean Martin in a film, The Rat Pack, years ago, and I got to play Fidel Castro in another film I did, in a thing called with Gabriel Anwar I can't remember what the title was, My Little Assassin, that's what it was. But anyway, when I did those projects, I had these huge TV networks and film companies doing the research for me. Yeah, exactly. Here's all the stuff, anything I needed, film footage, and plus I had wonderful writers who had written the scripts. So my job was to just absorb all of this and make it work, translate the material they're giving me.
No.
But Ronnie actually had to create the material.
So in
other words, he had to start with his obsession with this guy to begin with. And so it was such an organic kind of process for him. To me, that's the purest and best way for something
I
like this to happen.
I sense the...
Well, in addition to that, though, Rick, honestly, there were other people who wanted to direct it, but I knew Joe would have the perfect gentle hand because I created this. And, you know, if I got one of my putzy friends to direct it, you know, then you show it for rare, you don't... But it's like, Joe's watching. I've got to be great every time. I can't take a minute off. And the way he structured the end of the last bit of the script, and it was perfect.
If nothing else, I felt, at least at my age, I got to see Carlin perform. I got to see Richard Pryor. I did a movie with Richard Pryor.
Yeah, right.
And so, I mean, and while I never saw Lenny Bruce perform live, I remember vividly when he was here in Chicago and doing all of that. And ironically, I did the play, the Julian Berry play, Lenny, at the 11th Street Theater back in 1972. I understudied Lenny. So I was familiar with the subject matter, if nothing else.
The karma was perfect.
Yeah, it was just meant to be.
The karma was perfect. We got to take one last break, and we'll keep these guys all the way till 11 o'clock. Again, it's I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. It opens Wednesday for an extended stay at the Royal George Theater. The best place to get tickets is LennyBruceOnStage.com. I think the formal opening, the so-called critics opening, is Friday. But Ronnie's done the show 220 times. He'll be ready to go.
I'll do it right now for you.
Yeah, he'll do it right now. The way he did
I have a microphone. Here we go. I just don't want to get naked right now, Rick. I'm tired.
I may ask you to do a routine. Maybe. Not the famous routine. I do want to talk about the famous
routine. I'll do something for you.
Yeah, I think we'll be right back. Welcome back. I have a few more minutes with Joe Mantegna, who's directing Ronnie Marmo, his friend and my friend, in the one-man show written by Mr. Marmo. I'm Not a Comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce. It opens Wednesday at the Royal George, right across from Steppenwolf, right at Halsted North. LennyBruceOnStage.com is the best way to get tickets, and I really believe you should see this show because we live in times that are increasingly pinched by political correctness. Lenny Bruce was not politically correct, and I hate the phrase political correctness. Mike Royko was assailed for a time for not being politically correct. I don't even know what politically correct means, but it's certainly a buzzword out there. And, you know, there is a reason that Lenny Bruce is a Emmy-winning character in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. There is a reason that Bob Dylan has resurrected his famous song about Lenny Bruce. On his North American tour, he has started playing it. It opened in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago. He is playing that song for the first time in 12, 18 years. Yeah. There's a reason for that. This show is thought... You will walk out of the theater with your thoughts not only provoked, but I think freed. Am I making too much of this?
Well, no, Rick, and thank you for because you really get it. I mean, you know, we were just so thrilled when you saw the play, when you saw a production of it in New York. And when you came on, your comments and the article that you wrote about it, I mean, I looked at Ryan and we talked about it and said, well, talk about how lucky can we get that somebody with the, in the press business gets it to
it's
that level.
It's one thing to talk about the place, another thing to see and have the experience.
Yes.
And here's the thing about me. First of all, being in Chicago, I'm so excited. It's like a dream come true because L.A. and New York is important. Chicago is really important. And I always wanted to come here for more than just a visit. Like, this is like, I can't believe I'm here and I get to do this. So I hope Chicago embraces me the way I feel.
Some of the bits that people will see in the play.
He got arrested for in Chicago.
There will be references in the play as to that these things happened.
Christ and Moses, Religions Incorporated. But for me personally, like, you saw the play. I give every ounce of what I have. I turn myself over to the audience. I belong to the audience. I don't save anything for tomorrow. And I feel like if I'm lucky enough to have you sit in that audience and give me 90 minutes, I'm going to give you everything I have.
Well, you give more than 90 minutes because there are some things in the show that people want to talk about after the show. And you are more... You're not loath at all. You're not at all reluctant to engage in conversations about this thing. It makes people... It's a show that makes people laugh, and it makes people think. That's the sort of highest aspiration of art, and feel.
Right.
It makes people
feel. No, I realize that this is not just like... I don't just get to do the show. It's become a responsibility. I'm speaking for half this country, maybe more in a lot of ways.
More.
And so I can't tell how many people come and thank me, and I can't tell how many people come and meet me. I come right after the show because I want to make myself available, and people, the greatest conversations sometimes happen till 2 in the morning in the parking lot about really hard topics, and we end up becoming friends, and it's not always, you know, it's an interesting
one piece. Great connection Ronnie made was with Dick Gregory's son.
Yeah,
now, Dick Gregory was somebody I had so admired myself growing up as a comedian. We talked earlier about
he broke the color barrier at the Playboy Club.
But also the kind of thing of like he would do his routines and you'd start laughing and then you'd go, wow, and you know, you catch the same thing like with Lenny's stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so ironic in a way that his son...
Christian.
I didn't share with you the other day what he sent me. Can I share this real quick? Christian Gregory's son, Dick Gregory's son, Christian, sent me this text because I wrote him, and it was a very controversial bit, which I think you want to touch on. And I wrote him. I said, Christian, I got to be honest, I'm nervous. I hope they don't drag me out of Chicago. And he wrote me this text. He said... Huge congratulations, Ronnie. This is not only a big deal, but a very necessary message.
Bingo.
Most of our greatest lessons come from history. If no one's willing to tell the story, then it fails to be a lesson.
Huh.
My father's faith was rooted in the universe, the universal God force. It was that God force he would channel when he'd say, fear and God can't occupy the same space. He said, nervousness is natural. It speaks to the bigness of this undertaking. This is my favorite. He said, forget breaking a leg. Go out there and break open some minds.
Wow. That's what I think.
He said, utilize Lenny's genius to teach. This message needs to be heard. We can't blame the messenger. As bold and fearless as Lenny was, I'm fairly certain there was some nervousness knowing police, agents, provocateurs were in the attendance. Channel your inner Lenny.
Wow.
He sent me that 2 days ago because I said, Christian, I'm about to start the show. I hope everybody gets it. And he wrote me that.
Yeah, I mentioned Christian in the Tribune piece, too, because Dick Gregory... who was an African-American man, greatly, greatly admired one of Lenny Bruce's most incendiary, thought-provoking routines. generally known as the N-word routine that you do perform in the show, and I think is liberating for people because it is not just about the N-word. It is about a number, an increasing number of words that we shouldn't say.
Every ethnic background is basically called out, except for Asian. I never understood why he didn't touch those. That was the only people got they got let off the hook. But everybody else took a beating.
I hope you people are getting
including
a sense
the Italians, my people.
Yeah, you're the crew. I hope you're getting a sense of Ronnie Marmo, the person on this. You will see him as Lenny Bruce, and I'm not a comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce, directed by Joe Mantegna, whose theater bona fides are in Chicago are astonishing. Leading interpreter of David Mamet. I know David Mamet's mother. Here's another connection. David Mamet's mother saw Lenny Bruce live, so I will be taking her to this show. So, nice. Joe, it's great. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Ronnie,
thanks
welcome
so much,
to Chicago.
Rick.
I hope that you stay here forever.
Careful what you wish for, Rick.
I know.
You have a room in your place. Well,
you don't even know where I live.
No, I do. Please.
I'm not a comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce. It opens Wednesday at the Royal George Theater. The best place to get tickets is LennyBruceOnStage.com. Gentlemen, this is a pleasure and an honor.
My pleasure.
Rick, thanks, Rick.
Hope you enjoyed the show, folks. Roger Badish, I think, is going to be on air with Lisa, right? They don't care. After the commercials and after the news.